listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Welcome back to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast, where we bring you the best travel news, tips, and tricks every week to help you travel better. If you're enjoying the show, I hope you'll take just a moment to do two quick things for me. Subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to, whether that's Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, and also leave us a rating and a comment. We read all the comments that you leave, and by subscribing and rating the podcast, you help us reach more people with the show. Really appreciate if you take it just a moment to do those things. Up this week, we've got Charles McCool, one of the happiest travelers I've ever met, sitting down with me for a quick interview, followed by Lee Huffman of the Bald Thoughts blog. He's also getting ready to launch his own podcast. He stopped by to talk about the new IHG credit card and why you should have it in your wallet. But before that, just a couple of weeks ago, we started asking folks to submit questions that they had so we could answer them on the show. We haven't come up with a cute and catchy name yet for the segment, but generally speaking, love answering people's questions. And we've got our first one from somebody north of the border up in Canada. His name is Liam. And his question was about Air Canada versus United Airlines. He says, I'm based in Canada, but I've begun travel quite often for work with trips to Asia, Europe, and South America. I feel like I'm not earning on the right loyalty program. Since I'm a non-US resident, does it make sense for me to start crediting to Mileage Plus, which is United's program? From the folks I'm speaking with, it sounds like Premier 1K is the best ass to aim for since I can use their GPUs on Lufthansa and ANA. For those who aren't aware, GPUs are global Premier upgrades, which you, if you're a 1K member, you get a certain number of those each year that you can use to upgrade a flight to the next class of service. They're restricted to certain fare buckets, which can make them a little bit complicated to use, and you have to wait for inventory to open up. But the question here is, you know, should he be crediting to United Airlines instead of to Air Canada? And I think the first thing to note is it really depends on how much you're spending. Because, quite frankly, when you're not a U.S. resident, United doesn't have a PQD or Premier Qualifying Dollar requirement for their 1K status. And I was reminded of this as I was recording by producer Mike, something that I should have drilled into my head. But if you're not going to have to deal with the spending waiver, United does come into play. But I reached out to a friend of mine, Ryan, who's a super elite with Air Canada, which is their top tier. And, you know, his comments, having a ton of experience here, were if you can hit the spending level for super elite, you absolutely want to hang out with Air Canada. He says that on an annual basis, he's getting 20 to 30 flights a year upgraded to business class from the cheapest discount coach buckets. And that's a difference between United and Air Canada, where you'll have to buy up to a specific fare class with United to use those global premier upgrades. And that's a little bit of a lottery. I like to call it a little bit of a lottery because you can buy up to that higher fare class, the W class fare, if you will, a whiskey class fare, and there may not be upgrade inventory when you buy up, so you're on a wait list. And if you don't clear, you ended up paying more for that ticket but never got the upgrade, which I don't love. Ryan's success seems to be fairly high getting upgraded, and that's generally speaking what I've heard from the few super elites that I know. But you've got a fairly steep spend requirement in that it's about $20,000 of paid travel. That's Canadian dollars, paid travel on a yearly basis, and that's before you figure in the taxes. So you definitely have to be either buying some fairly expensive tickets or you need to be flying quite a bit. But so I think moral of the story here is if you can hit the spend requirement for Air Canada Super Elite status, we want you flying there. They've got the new Signature Lounge in Toronto for international travel, which is just an unbelievable product. I got to sample that before it opened, and it's just a great place to have a meal. And they've got some great soft products out there, and your upgrade percentage should be fairly high. If you're not going to hit that spend requirement, then yeah, 1K is probably your better bet. Some of it really depends on how frequently you think you can clear those global premier upgrades, because you will be paying a bit more for some of your tickets to get on the upgrade list. And so that upgrade percentage, I think, is where you're going to figure out how valuable it is to you. Unfortunately, there's no clear-cut percentage to follow on how well you'll do with that. So a little bit of a trial and error to see how well you'll do with that. Living north of the border on the eastern part of Canada, you'll be connecting through hubs like Dulles and Newark. I tend to think that you'll probably be more likely to clear international upgrades out of Dulles than Newark, but I think both are going to be a bit tough for you to get where you're going. Hope that helps answer your question. If you've got a question, I hope you'll submit it to us. There's a bunch of different ways you can do that. You can tweet us or hit us up on Facebook at Miles2GoPodcast. You can tweet at me at Pizza in Motion. You can also email us at Miles2GoPodcast@gmail.com or ed@pizzainmotion.com. All of those places get to us, and we'll be happy to get that question on the air for you in a future episode. With that, we're going to step aside for a quick second. We'll be right back with Charles McCool's interview. After that, we'll finish up with Lee Huffman from the Bald Thoughts Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be right back. The Miles to Go Podcast is brought to you in part by No Jet Lag. Don't let jet lag get you down. Flight crews, sports teams, and business executives around the world sing the praises of No Jet Lag. No Jet Lag is the leader in jet lag management for the last 25 years. Don't let jet lag spoil your next trip. Visit nojetlag.com to get yours today. Hey, welcome back to the Miles to Go podcast. And just a brief side note, we're testing out some new technology on Miles to Go. Got some new microphones to try and make it a little bit easier to record with guests on the go. So if the audio isn't perfect, I hope you'll be patient with us while we try and tweak stuff. Today I'm joined by Charles McCool of McCool Travel. Charles and I have known each other for a handful of years now. I don't remember exactly how long, but here's the interesting thing, and the reason why I wanted Charles to come on the podcast. There are tons of blogs out there that talk about their best way to travel. And don't get me wrong, if I could fly in a first-class suite with a door and a bed and $500 bottles of champagne, I'd do that every single day of the week if it didn't cost me any more money. And that's really the key part, is would it cost more money? There's always decisions to be made. And the thing that I think I picked up on from the very first time that Charles and I met was he has a way of figuring out how to make travel fun in whatever budget it is you're traveling in. And so as we were sitting down talking about lunch before we started recording, we focused on that because, Charles, you had just been to Mississippi. And you talked about some of the restaurants that you found down there that you thought were awesome.
That's exactly the background that I'm trying to do, is to help people travel happier and have more fun, cool experiences when they travel. And not everybody either has the means or the desire to travel in super luxury. So some people think it's a more authentic experience to travel and hang out with people and stay in their houses and things like that. But indeed, I was just along the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and I really didn't know the area. I wasn't completely familiar with it.
Right.
I'd been there a couple of times to the casinos in Biloxi and
so
forth. And I knew it was Jimmy Buffett's homeland.
Yep.
So I actually the theme of my article was these things are really surprising about this area. And I hope I encourage some people to go check it out that may have otherwise thought, I don't ever want to go to Mississippi. But it's a cool place.
And if you're listening along, you can find him at McCoolTravel.com. And, one of the first things that Charles and I sort of did together was we sort of had this debate about hotels versus Airbnb, if you will. And it's one of those things where I certainly have strong opinions about wanting to stay in hotels. And I don't think there's been anything that's caused me to want to change my opinion on that. But I think the thing I love about your opinion on Airbnb is when I listen to it and I think about how you travel, it really does fit your travel profile. That's the way you want to be somewhere.
Absolutely. I probably stay in hotels more than I stay in Airbnbs, sure. But it's like I have two children, and just like you do. So when we would travel and my kids were teenagers, they didn't want to be in the same room.
Right.
So do I want to rent three hotel rooms or do I want to get a suite? Well, it just made sense for us to get a vacation rental property. And Airbnb happens to be the biggest player.
Right.
But there are many others. So I just found better value to rent a house or a condo or an apartment. And that fit our needs. But that's sort of, again, going back to my philosophy, it's that I don't want to tell people there's one way to do anything.
Right.
I want people just to travel more, to travel longer, to travel better, whatever they want to do. And you don't have to follow someone else's formula, although all those formulas out there, you just adapt them to what you want to do.
Yeah, and I think it's a great point. You've got so many people out there that promote certain ways to travel, and I, you know, I'm sure I'm guilty of this from time to time. But you know, as we said, not everybody travels in first class. Not everybody travels at a 5-star luxury resort. And you know, sort of looping back to the Airbnb comment, I have 2 kids as well. You know, just like you, we've got these families, and how do we get out on the road together? And I think you know where our travel patterns are slightly different is I have a significant amount of business travel, so I do earn elite status. And when I've got that elite status, right now at least, I have the option of, say, turning to a chain like Hyatt, saying, "Hey, I want to plunk down my upgrade for this trip. I want to confirm it in advance, and I want that extra space." Now, if I couldn't do that, I think Airbnb would be a bigger part of how I travel. And so I think circumstances have to come into play when we talk about what's the right strategy. It's not a one-size-fits-all, and I think your travel represents that, that travel's not a one-size-fits-all world.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm not going to tell you have to stay in an Airbnb. That's exactly right. I taught travel classes for 12 years, and people would come in like – there'd be someone that lived in Great Falls, Virginia. And I don't know if everybody knows Great Falls, but it's one of the most exclusive communities in the country, or if
very
not the world.
So. Yeah.
So I would have people come in and say, "Well, I want to travel cheaper, but I always have to stay in a Ritz-Carlton or a Four Seasons."
Yeah.
You know, and then there could be someone else, a student who just graduated college and says, "I want to travel for 18 months with a backpack."
Right.
You know, and I just want to spend the least amount of money possible. So I sometimes call myself like the Home Depot of travel planning.
I love that.
I'll point you to the right tools. Yep. I'll point you to the right strategies.
Yep.
You're a do-it-yourselfer. You figure out how to do it. And if you do want some additional assistance, you know, you can hire me to help plan that trip. And there's other people out there that'll help you fix that toilet problem you have or something like that. But I mean, I feel like the points bloggers do the same thing. There's plenty of travel people out there. No one has to go at this alone and feel like you can't solve your problem. You figure out what you want to do, and you can find those resources out there. McCool Travel is a great one. So it's Pizza in Motion, and there are hundreds and thousands of others too.
Yeah, and you're right. There's a big spectrum there. There are, you know, obviously there are award planning services that will, you know, that will help plan the entire trip for you for a fee. And you know, I've never used one myself because I sort of like the do-it-yourself model. But it's almost like saying, you know, that some folks like to take a tour when they're going somewhere. We have some great friends of ours that did a 15-day trip to Italy, and the entire thing was pre-planned by a tour group, and everything was scheduled. And, you know, that's not the way we necessarily like to travel, because we like to explore things sort of off the beaten path. But for them, it was a perfect fit. And I think there's an acknowledgement that different people are going to travel different ways. And you know, separately, you know, as we 6 or 7 minutes into recording the segment, we've already got the title, because the Home Depot of travel is absolutely going to be
love it.
I got to go find that T-shirt now.
You got an exclusive.
But I think it's, you know, I love that philosophy. And so, like, ever since you and I met years ago, you know, I've always thought about how I've never heard you really come back from someplace and say that it didn't necessarily fit, or it wasn't fun, or it was just you found different things in different places. And that sort of comes back to that philosophy of, hey, we're each going to make out of a destination what we want to make out of it. Whether it's, you know, my kids wanting to get lost in Venice and wander their way back to the hotel with a couple of gelato stops on the way, of course, because it's Venice, or you spending time on the Gulf Coast in places like Biloxi, exploring a part of the U.S. and discovering things that you didn't know about it.
Totally agree. As a travel blogger, travel writer, whatever you call myself nowadays, I adopted that philosophy about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I saw all the articles say 10 must things you must do before you die, or here's how you have to spend your 48 hours when you go somewhere. And I thought that's just shouting to the consumer.
Right.
And I thought what I would do is I would give you a foundation. I would go somewhere. I'd point out a couple of places to eat and some insider tidbit, like, oh, there's a food truck rally every Thursday night, something like that, and let you decide. So I don't like to dictate what people do, because everybody has different preferences and what have you. I did a Twitter chat yesterday, and I love doing
Twitter chats.
And it was all about cheap flight techniques.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I mentioned was, for a last-minute flight deal, look at packages.
Yep.
And someone said, I would never buy a package, because I want to pick my own lodging. And I'm like, why would you not buy a package if it was cheaper than a last-minute flight?
Right.
Because you don't have to stay in the lodging.
Right.
So if you buy a package that includes a flight, their lodging, their rental car, you can pick what you want to take and leave out of that whole package. And I mentioned in that same Twitter chat that there's a group of people that are second homeowners in Aruba. And every year they go down there for 4 months and they buy a package deal to go to Aruba. Now, of course, they're not staying in an Aruba hotel because they own a place down there.
Right.
But by buying a package to Aruba, it's cheaper than a flight to Aruba. No, it doesn't make any sense. But it's one of those loopholes in the travel industry.
Well, there's so many things that don't make sense in the way things price in the travel industry. And that's why I'm always a big proponent with folks of exploring as many channels as you can before you book. Just because you'll see things pop up that, as you say, don't really make sense. And yet somebody's willing to sell that product to you. So, I've become much more agnostic, where I was much more narrowly focused on how I would fly and where I would fly. I would always start my searches on one airline's website. I was an AA guy. And now I definitely play the field a lot more. And, you know, when we talk about playing the field, I listen to the places that you talk about when we get together that you're planning to go to. And we were just together at Frequent Traveler University a couple weeks ago, and I won't remember all the places that you had on your radar, because it was like somebody reading off a grocery list. Well, I've got milk, I've got oranges, I've got Aruba, I've got Easter Island, I've got Mississippi. So what's on the horizon? Where are you heading over the next 6 months?
As a travel blogger, most of them are assignments, but I'm flying to Chicago next week and then driving a couple of hours west to Wisconsin. I'm working with a couple of destinations there, Janesville and Beloit. Come back for a few days and then go into a travel conference in New York. So I'm going up to Niagara for Travel Media Showcase.
Yep.
Then it gets really busy. So then I'm going on a cruise along the Columbia River with UnCruise.
Nice.
Come back and go to the Outer Banks for a little bit.
Yep.
I'm doing a nice long cruise with Carnival, my first Carnival cruise. And they have a program called Journeys, which is a longer term cruise, and it's geared towards an older audience.
Yep.
So that's exciting destinations I'm going to. It's a Panama Canal, and I'm going to Colombia and Nicaragua.
So you're cruising through the Panama Canal?
I think they call it a partial transit.
Yeah, okay.
So I guess they turn around or something
like that. I haven't done that yet, and we've been down there, and we did a partial transit on a separate small boat. We flew down. But I do want to cruise, whether it's from East Coast to West Coast or West Coast to East Coast, I do want to go all the way through the canal. That's sort of one of my bucket list things.
Yeah, I'd love to leave Fort Lauderdale and end up in Long Beach.
Yeah.
It'd take 21 days to do that.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. So you had your wallet out earlier, before we run away, first and foremost, I did see a Home Depot card in there, which I think is hilarious. We'll have to make sure we get that logo for
the
show.
It's a good card.
But what are you we were having some credit card strategy stuff beforehand, but tell people what you're carrying. Give them a card or two that's in your wallet now that you think are valuable tools for you in terms of what you're earning points on.
My primary credit card is the Chase Sapphire Reserve, and so I got that a couple of years ago.
Yep.
It has a hefty annual fee of $450, but you get the $300 annual travel credit every year. So
right.
In essence, it's a $150 credit card, but I fly a lot, not as much as you, but I'm taking full advantage of the lounge access through that priority pass.
Yeah.
Plus you get I'm getting 5 points per dollar thanks to you on telecommunications bills.
Yep.
So my Verizon bills are like $600 a month.
Right,
so
right.
I'm getting 3,000 points a month just from that.
Right.
And then I buy a lot of gift cards also thanks to you. I buy a lot of Amazon gift cards through Office Depot that gets me a lot of points. That's my primary card. I have a couple of others that I play with, but as we were talking, points isn't my main thing.
No, but everybody
got it. But it is something I am trying to focus on. Where am I spending money and how I can get some value for that?
Well, everybody has to have cards in their wallet. I think what varies is how many. And so it's like, you know, for example, like you and I talk about the gift card thing. And, you know, I buy a lot of those gift cards on my Chasing card because I love the Ultimate Rewards points. But I think, you know, some people – but gosh, I know people that have 50 or 60 cards. I Zach Hunnigan from the Points Guy a couple weeks ago, and he said I won't get the number right. I think it's 55 cards, and like totally get that. I have somewhere in the 20 range, but there's four or five key ones I carry. And I think for anybody, I think the takeaway there is, I think everybody should have anybody who wants to travel, and understands that they need to pay their balance off at the end of the month, you should have at least two cards in your wallet. And my theory on that is you should have something that you use for everyday spending. But yeah. You know, just from a diversification standpoint, and I'm sort of in this bind now with Marriott and Starwood and how they're changing all their cards. If you take all – even though I love Ultimate Rewards, if I pile all of my points in that one program and something happens – you know, overnight, which we've seen happen, then I'm in a bind. And so I do just like I don't want my retirement to all be in one stock. I would say, like, you know, if you're not going to have 10 cards, you should have two.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I screwed that up. The CSR card, you don't get the 5 points on the gift card. You get that through the Ink Plus.
So I can. But you're getting your lounge access.
Yeah, I am. So I have those two cards. I have Ink. I also have an IHG credit card, yep, and an American Airlines credit card. I still have the old Barclays card.
Right. And you're a big fan of the IHG card because you said the annual fee is low and you like the points.
The annual fee is 45 or 49, and you get a free night every year.
Right.
So last year I stayed at the Willard in D.C., and it was a $600 room.
Yeah.
I booked one for Toronto in September, and it was an $800 room.
That's awesome.
I ended up canceling because of scheduling, but I still have till March to use it. So that's high value. And so I don't necessarily use that card all the time, but just for one free night, it's well worth it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there are a number of cards out there in the market like that. And I think the ISG one is one I typically forget about because I normally use ISG for more either remote stays, like when I go to visit family in Canada and there's not a lot of other properties in the market, or discount stays. I don't normally spend those vacation stays at the higher end properties, but it's a great value to, you know, score a $500, $600 night at the Willard for a $49 annual fee.
Exactly.
All right, so before we run away, tell folks where they can find you when you're not on the podcast with me and having lunch.
I'm online, McCool Travel. That name is MCCOOL. It is my real name. I get that question a lot. Charles McCool is my name, and that's my handle on most social media. So you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and what have you.
Yeah, and my two cents on that is he is a great Twitter follow. I enjoy looking at the stuff that he tweets on a weekly basis. There's always a ton of great pictures. As he said, big Twitter chat guy. So there's a good conversation going about what's going on in travel, where you can find great travel deals, and where he's going next. Charles, thanks a ton for coming on the podcast with me. I appreciate it. Hopefully we'll have you back on again soon after you go somewhere cool.
Thank you, Ed.
Take care. Guys, we'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast.
While we take a quick break from the podcast, I wanted to talk about one of my favorite podcasts, Zorkcast, run by a buddy of mine, Michael Traeger, not the text-based game from the 80s. He's talking every week about travel and casino loyalty. He's one of the few people in this space who knows, you know, a bunch about travel but also understands the casino loyalty programs. And you might be saying, well, hey, I don't really spend a lot of time in casinos, but there's a game there to be played, just like in travel loyalty, where you can earn plenty of free travel by taking advantage of the systems that the casinos put out there. At any rate, give Zorkcast a try if you're looking for something just a little bit different in the podcasting world. Michael's episodes are 9 minutes or less, so they're easy to digest. With that, back to Miles to Go. Welcome back to the Miles to Go podcast. You know, we try to cover a wide variety of topics here on Miles to Go, even things that I'm not necessarily an expert in. And I don't really know a ton about the ISG credit cards because I don't patronize the program a whole lot. I somehow dumb lucked into their top tier Spire status last year, and I've had a couple of stays, award stays, if you will, that went fine, but I don't spend a ton of time focusing on the program. So I pulled on my friend Lee Huffman, who writes for Bald Thoughts and is also starting his own podcast, We Travel There, to talk a little bit about IHG and the IHG credit card in case that's an avenue for you guys. They've got a ton of hotels, and so there's a ton of coverage around the world, and it's definitely something that's relevant. Lee, thanks for jumping on with us for the first time on Miles to Go.
It's great to be here, Ed, and hello everybody.
And I can't wait for the launch of We Travel There, which depending on when we air this, should be imminent. So you guys will have to tune in there. We'll definitely have Lee back to talk about the podcast shortly. All right, so break it down for folks. What's the value prop here on getting the IHG credit card? You know, why does somebody want it in their wallet?
Well, the number one thing is it has the highest bonus ever, 100,000 points right now. And again, that magic number of 100,000 means a lot of different things in different programs, right? Because 100,000 Hyatt points is worth far more than 100,000 Hilton points, for example.
Absolutely. Right?
So just like the American dollar versus the Mexican peso, right? So yep. There's a lot of difference, and don't focus on just the number. You got to focus on the value of the points and the value that the card brings. And to me, the IHG Rewards Club Premier card actually provides a lot of value, even after the 100,000 bonus points. Normally the bonus is between like say 60 to 80,000. So it's not like it's a huge difference, not like it's doubled, but those additional points could get you a couple extra good nights. So the number one thing with this card is the old card used to have a $49 annual fee and the annual free night, because that's a big thing in credit cards.
Yeah.
For hotels, you get that annual free night. Unlike the other ones, like with Hyatt and Marriott, SPG, the IHG card used to give you a free night at any property anywhere in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can get just tremendous value for that $49 annual fee. You can, I mean, whether it's a Holiday Inn that's $100 or, you know, some of the other ones that are the Intercontinentals that say in Bora Bora and some of the other just exotic islands that are out there, you can get even like a value of like $1,000. So, but with the new card, unfortunately, you're kind of downgraded a little bit as far as what the value of that free night. It's a maximum value of only 40,000 points.
Mm, okay.
So that is a little bit of a bummer.
Definitely not as good as it used to be. But I mean, if you think about it, you know, other cards have downgraded that as well. Hyatt used to be two free nights anywhere in the world. And obviously they've got some awesome properties. Yeah. I think that's sort of a sign of the times for a positive economy, that the sign-up bonuses on some cards are not as lucrative as they used to be. I think on the really big value cards, Chase Sapphire Reserve and some of the big stuff that's come out, those sign-up bonuses are really compelling and some of the benefits are. But at the, what I won't say the lower end, but in that mid-tier, you know, a card that's going to be a $45 to $100 annual fee, I have seen that the benefits are, you know, lower than they used to be generally.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, really, it's a kind of a joke, but it's almost like we need like a good recession to kind of reset things on credit cards, right? So,
well, I think on a lot of things, it'd be interesting to see, because you've changed how hotel loyalty works, you've changed how airline loyalty works, and we've done all that in a really good economy. I'll be curious to see, you know, when the economy does take another dip, mm-hmm. how much of the benefits come back, but also too how much of have these airlines and hotel chains trained us not to be loyal, but to chase the better deal.
Exactly. So, but getting back to the card, I mean, there's one of the things I really like as far as the additional benefits that they've added. You get the fourth reward night free, which is a tremendous value. I like the City Prestige card, which I guess recently has just kind of disappeared off the city website. But I like the ability to get that fourth night free. So if you're going to stay at a place for, you know, 3, 4, 5 nights, being able to reduce the cost by, you know, 25% by getting that fourth night free is a huge value. You know, being able to stay a little bit extra on that next vacation.
Yeah, I also think there too, one of the things I like about that benefit, which I didn't know about until you and I hopped on to record, you know, Starwood, may rest in peace, you know, always had the fifth night free benefit. And, you know, we use that a bunch. But the reality of it is that we take a lot of shorter trips. And so getting to 5 nights in one place is tough to do. Not tough, but it happens less frequently than I'd like it. Whereas fourth night free is much more reasonable for us in the way that we move around. Not that I'm a huge fan of the IHG properties, but I could see fourth night free hitting us, you know, probably 70 or 80% of the time we travel, as opposed to fifth night free is probably only 30 or 40%.
No, exactly. And I don't even travel, long for long distances like that either. So what I will generally do, if we say we're normally going to have like a 3-night stay, like Friday, Saturday, Sunday night, and then come back on Monday, is that even if we're going to come back Monday night, I'll still get that fourth night for free. And then just leave your bags and leave all your stuff. Or if you want to take a shower, you want to like come back from the pool and change your clothes, then you don't have to worry about trying to request a late checkout, and maybe you do, maybe you don't get it.
Oh, I love it. You know, it's exactly what you got here. Lee has just defined, not to sound pejorative, but IHG has, you know, a fairly thin list of elite benefits. And so now if you want late checkout on your 3-night stay, you get the credit card, you get guaranteed late checkout.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah, you do. So so you're a Kempton guy, for folks that don't know that. What do you think about the value of this card in the wallet of somebody who's specifically focusing on the Kempton properties in the chain as opposed to, say, ISG as a whole?
Well, as of a few months ago, it was tremendous value because a lot of the Kempton properties, especially the nicer ones, are in the 60, 70,000 point range. But now that they've put a cap on it at 40,000, unfortunately, a lot of the nicer Kempton properties are going to be excluded from that free night. So that part is really tough. But
yeah, that is a bummer.
You know, factoring in that fourth night free, I mean, you're going to want to stay that fourth night at a Kempton property. You know, like the Seafire and the Grand Caymans, a lot of the properties that they have in New York, a lot of the ones they have in LA are really nice now. They've opened a few in the Hollywood area. They have a couple down in San Diego. So they have some really nice properties and a lot of places you really want to travel to. So, and they're getting ready to expand internationally quite a bit. So I could see using that fourth night free as using points to book the hotels, using that as a way to save quite a bit on what's actually more like a higher end redemption at that 60 or 70,000 point range.
Yeah. All right. Well, cool. Thanks a bunch for coming on to spell out some of the terms of the card. I'm still not sure where it fits in my wallet, but I think it probably fits into a lot of my listeners' wallets, and that's really what I'm thankful for. I'm still mostly a Hyatt guy, and I'm still jury's still out on Marriott SPG. IHG absolutely has a place for me, but it's more far afield. I really should dip my toe into the Kempton waters though, because every time I hear you talk about it, the properties do sound great.
No, they really know how to take care of their people. Again, it's a little iffy sometimes on some of the newer properties. They haven't quite absorbed the Kempton culture that's been there for years in some of the older properties. But they go top notch, and I would put them pound for pound against some of the higher end Hyatt properties as far as the quality of the stay, the staff people as far as how they treat you, and the upgrades and amenities you get.
Awesome. Well, Lee, thanks a bunch for being on with us. When you're not hopping on the podcast with me, tell folks where they can find you, blog, podcast, social media, all that stuff.
Sure. So I'm at Bald Thoughts or We Travel There on all the different social media channels. The blog is Bald Thoughts. We talk a lot about family travel and how to save money on your next vacation. And the We Travel There podcast focuses on finding the locals, experts, what they recommend as far as the best things to see, eat, do, drink, and experience while you're in their town. So check them out. Again, we're going to be launching in September, and hopefully look forward to hearing you there.
Yeah, and just for you folks that are listening in, Lee and I are testing out a new platform that has some video, and I can verify for you, other than just a little bit of 5 o'clock shadow, there is just not an ounce of hair on that boy's head. Thanks very much for being on, Lee.
Thanks, everybody.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. And we're back to wrap up this week's episode of the Miles to Go podcast. You know, the more I think about it, I think we really are in the golden age of travel. Maybe not the golden age of all travel, but definitely the golden age of cheap travel. As I'm recording this stuff, getting ready to launch this week on Wednesday, we had fares yesterday that were $63 one way from the U.S. to Europe. I had a friend of mine that was hopping on a flight on a new airline, well, not a new airline, but a new carrier from the U.S. to Europe called Primera Air, where he was able to spend just over $100 to upgrade from an economy seat to a premium economy seat to get himself a better sleep on the way over the ocean. It was unheard of even 5 years ago, definitely 10 years ago, to be able to find these sorts of deals. And they're just everywhere now. What does that tell you? You need to get out and travel. Needs probably a little bit too strong of a word, but if you're not taking advantage of some of these cheap flights, you really are missing out. And then maybe you don't want to take a tiny coach seat on a red-eye flight to Europe, so use some miles to get you over there maybe in something a little bit more comfortable, and then use one of those $100 one-way fares to get yourself back from Europe. But pick a place and go. There's so many great destinations that are affordable right now. We had a few weeks ago Gilbert on from God Save the Points talking about 5 breathtaking places you can visit that aren't as expensive as the Maldives. And you'll find tons of posts on my blog about places we've been to in Europe that are just stunningly beautiful and, amazingly cheap to travel to right now. We're in September, which means you should be thinking about spring break travel if you're a family, getting that stuff booked as all the schedules open up with the low-cost carriers.
And, you know, you should also be thinking just a little bit about next summer. You won't find a ton of deals right now, but we've already had a couple of summer travel deals for next year. I'll be talking about one that I took advantage of pretty soon on my blog. So, you know, keep an eye out to the future and keep an eye out for those deals. There's just so many of them right now. That's a full wrap on this week's episode. I want to thank everyone for tuning in, and I'm going to ask you for a couple of favors. First, if you're enjoying the show, I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, etc. And then also, if you'll rate the show, those ratings and comments help us make the show better. And by subscribing to the podcast and rating the podcast, it helps us get seen by more folks in the Apple Podcast Store, if you will, or Google Podcasts. Helps us move up those rating boards. Those things are important to us. I'm going to have another ask of you here shortly. Don't have all the details worked out, but we've got a big fundraising push for some great charities coming up, and it's going to involve me doing something crazy, which is nothing new for folks that have been listening and reading for as long as I've been doing both my podcast and my blog. It's going to be a bit of a crazy week getting everything put together for next week's episode. I can't wait to bring it out to you, and I can't wait to announce what we're going to be doing to raise some money for charity. But until then, we've got miles to go.